many things that happened during the years Joseph Stalin ruled the Soviet Union remain something of a mystery, like what was life like for the people who returned from the gulags, and what was life like during the Ukrainian famine of 1932 and 33? Vasily Grossman's novel Everything Flows deals with many of the tragedies that occurred under Stalin, and it is startlingly, that's a word that I write but I rarely say, considering that the author wrote it in the Soviet Union from 1955 to 1964. An English translation has just been published by New York Review Books Classics, and I'm pleased that it brings Robert Chandler to our show. He and his wife Elizabeth Chandler translated it from the Russian and contributed notes and a new introduction. Welcome to our show. Everything Flows is a short novel, but it encompasses more than its share of human tragedy. Is it a well-known book in Russia?
Grossman is more widely read in most European countries and in the States than he is in Russia at the moment.
There are
a number of possible reasons. It's partly there's a reluctance in Russia today to really look at everything to do with Stalinism. Basically, people just don't want to know about it.
But eventually was published after many years of being suppressed in the Soviet Union and in the very last days?
Yes. I mean, there was a wave of...
After Gorbachev came to power.
There was a wave of writers like Grossman and other people writing about the camps and so on who were published for the first time in the late 1980s.
Although some of them were published in the West, Solzhenitsyn became famous. Was this book smuggled out as well?
Grossman wasn't as smart as Solzhenitsyn, and it's possible that, I should put it the other way around, that Solzhenitsyn learned from Grossman's example. So Grossman's long novel, Life and Fate, was confiscated by the KGB, and instead of being published in the West in the early 60s, like it might have been, it didn't get published in the West till the mid-80s. Solzhenitsyn understood what had happened to Grossman and the mistakes he had made, and so Solzhenitsyn was a lot smarter in getting his work to the West.
Now, Life and Fate is considered Grossman's masterpiece. You also translated it, but it had been published originally in the Soviet Union, hadn't it?
The first Russian edition was published in Switzerland, in Lausanne, in the early 80s.
That is way after he died.
Way after he died. Then translations were published in English, French, German, etc. And then after that, it was in the late 80s again, it was published in the Soviet Union.
You write in your introduction that Grossman is simply doing what he can to remember the lives and deaths of millions who've been too little remembered. Did he actually write that? Was that his stated goal?
He says something pretty close to that. There's an article which I've been recently translating, which will be published in our collection of stories and articles that will be out in the autumn. And he wrote one of the first pieces ever written about Treblinka, the Hell of Treblinka. He was with the Red Army when it entered eastern Poland. And this was published in November 1944. And it's a very, very clear, vivid, and also sober article. And he does say at one point towards the end how something like, I understand that it is painful for the reader to read these things, but believe me, it's even more painful for the writer to be writing about these things, but to pass by and not write about these things is just, you know, would just be unthinkable.
Well, did working as a war reporter help him find his voice and his subject matter?
I think so. There was a rather simplistic picture put about it sort of 15, 20 years ago of Grossman being a sort of totally ordinary, just slightly better than average Soviet writer who suddenly metamorphosed in the early 50s into being a great, great writer. He wrote some good things in the 1930s. He was clearly the first story that he was really known for in 1934. It's clearly the work of a very, very talented man.
And how, but, how good is he as a stylist? I mean, we're talking about Russian as opposed, and I'm even curious about how you get across the richness of one language when you're translating it into another language. Does it translate well from Russian to English?
You've asked several things there. First, I think he just wrote better and better throughout his life. More and more clearly, more and more vividly, more and more succinctly. He's not a writer. I mean, there are writers who write prose that is close to poetry. There are writers who write prose that is close to journalism. Grossman's is as close as great prose can be to journalism. He doesn't often play with words. But what I realise more and more, and especially in his late work, especially in Everything Flows, and especially in the very, very fine last stories that he wrote at the end of his life, his thinking is very, very complex and subtle, and it doesn't just move in a straight line. It's very, very easy to miss, as a translator, to miss some of the shifts in the thinking. And he's often kind of zigzagging a bit, and he uses the word but a great deal. He will say something, and then he'll half take it back, and then he'll say it again slightly differently. And it's easy to just smooth over some of these things. So that's the real work of translating him, was to be quite clear that I had understood all of his thought.
If his work was suppressed, how did he support himself?
He was never, I mean, he was, there were quite a, he was probably always getting some money as a member of the Writers' Union. The novel before Life and Fate, For a Just Cause, also about Stalingrad, I mean, that was with great difficulty published, but it was one of, it did become one of the acclaimed Soviet war novels. So he was getting a substantial income from that.
Although it was tough for Jews before and after the war, and is it important to know that Grossman was Jewish?
I'm trying to clarify that for myself. It's quite difficult. It seems pretty sure that he didn't know Yiddish. He came from a wealthy, assimilated family. He doesn't appear to have been particularly interested in Jewish things until they were kind of forced on his attention with his mother's death in a Nazi massacre in western Ukraine and then Treblinka. So his Jewishness was kind of forced into his consciousness. There seem to be slightly contradictory memoirs by different people about Grossman's feelings at the end of his life. One person has written that Grossman wanted to be buried in the Jewish cemetery in Moscow and that his widow didn't fulfill that wish. But other people say that isn't the case, and I haven't confidently found out the truth about that.
My guess is Robert Chandler, translator of Everything Flows by Vasily Grossman, published by New York Review Books Classics. In the first chapter, Ivan Grigorievich, a former prisoner, is returning to Moscow after spending 30 years in the labor camps. And when is this?
The mid-50s. It's soon after Stalin's death, yes.
Were many prisoners released after Stalin's death?
A huge number of prisoners. Perhaps sort of 55, 56, most of all.
And what had this character been imprisoned for?
I don't think it's... he'd been very... The character in the book had been very outspoken as a student. He was one of the tiny minority who were imprisoned for something approaching a real reason. He had gone out of his way to challenge the authorities.
So, but he was a political prisoner, in effect.
Yeah, but, I mean, 99% of the political prisoners were arrested on trumped-up charges.
Did his return turn out to be as joyous as one might have expected?
He finds it difficult. He meets his cousin. This is a long-awaited meeting on both sides. his cousin is a successful scientist, and their meeting is really a disaster. The cousin has been, the successful cousin has been sort of preparing to make this kind of great speech of sort of confession, really, about all the kind of wicked compromises he's made in his life. But faced with the reality of this guy who's spent sort of 25 years in the camps, and he can't bring himself to do this, and he ends up justifying himself, and the whole conversation just doesn't work out. But he does eventually, the hero does eventually find work that he finds quite congenial.
But it must have been tough for people to come back and know that friends, associates, neighbors had denounced them, and continue to play the game while they were off in prison for something as simple as expressing their own thoughts.
There's a famous statement by Anna Akhmatova. She said in the mid-50s that sort of two Russias are confronting each other now, the Russia that spent time in the camps and the Russia that sent them there. That's a very kind of strong and dramatic statement. Grossman possibly saw it a bit differently. There's a tiny story of his about a woman who comes back from the camps, and she was someone quite important once. And she moves into a communal flat. She dies very soon afterwards. She's immediately forgotten. A letter arrives, an important official letter arrives, saying that her husband has, addressed to her, saying that her husband has been officially rehabilitated. And everybody there is just playing cards on a Sunday morning, and they've forgotten who this woman was. They have to be reminded by a teenage girl who kind of got to know her a bit better than the rest of them. And they don't know what to do with this letter. You know, where should they eventually agree that they should hand it in to the house management office, and then they go back to their game of cards. So really, they just don't give a damn.
But Grossman seems to want us to pity not only the victims, but also the perpetrators, because he sees them all as victims of the system.
Grossman very seldom portrays anybody without some degree of respect. There's a remarkable story he wrote about a girl. This is based on a real life story of a little girl who was adopted at the height of the purges by the family of Nikolai Yezhov, who was in charge of the NKVD, someone responsible for sending 1.5 million people to their death or to camps. And so in this story, we see Yezhov and his wife through the eyes of a little tiny girl and her peasant nanny. And we see Yezhov with some sympathy. The nanny doesn't really understand what's happening in the country, but she can see that there's something wrong in Yezhov's eyes. She feels sorry for Yezhov.
Now, Grossman worked on Everything Flows for 9 years, knowing that it wasn't going to be published, at least as long as there was a Soviet Union. Why did it take him so long, and why was he unable to finish it?
He wrote a complete version of it in the mid-50s, which is a fairly simple, straightforward story of the life of Ivan after he's come back from the camps. He then obviously just left that, hoping to publish it one day. And then at the end of his life, after Life and Fate had been arrested, as he put it, during his last 3 years, he returned inserting lots of material into Everything Flows.
And so, including the Ukrainian famine, which we have not been able to talk about, but
yes,
it plays a major part in the story.
Most of the historical material he inserted later.
Does it work as a complete novel?
I think so. I think I understand it now as the whole novel is about Ivan coming back from the camps and trying to make sense of his life. And trying to make sense of his life begins with talking to his cousin,
Robert Chandler will be reading from Everything Flows Tonight at 7 o'clock at Idlewild Books. That's at 12 West 19th Street on the second floor. You can check our show page for more details. The book Everything Flows is published by New York Review Books Classics. Thank you so much for being with us.